Okay, we're here with Neil Deacon, and it is June 5th, 2006. And Neil, when did you first start using computers?
When I was 10, and my father bought us a computer for Christmas. And that was when I started using computers, and he taught me how to program little things that just drew stuff on the screen and all that.
So was your father a programmer?
No, but he'd played around with it. But he's an engineer, but he played around a little bit with it, made little things. He was doing various business things with it.
And what kind of, what sort of, that's what got you interested in computers. Did you take any formal?
I took computer science in university.
You did?
Yeah, for 4 years.
For 4 years?
Yeah.
And do you remember the first programming project you worked on?
At work or early
sort
in
sort of
life?
Any, kind of your maybe first sort of substantial project, even either at university or before university.
Well, probably the most substantial one would probably be my thesis, which was an application written in Java, which it was sort of a math-related thing. So you'd draw various shapes on the screen, and it would compute various answers and so on. It's a bit hard to explain unless you know the math and all that.
Sure. Well, when did you first begin contributing to open source projects? And how did you first sort of connect to the open source community?
Well, I started working at an ISP, Simpatico in Canada. I was doing browser customization of Netscape. And then Netscape went open source into Mozilla. So I kept following through on that. And I just got interested. And I started writing documentation and so forth for it outside of work. And then I just got involved in it through that.
Okay, so what are the all the different projects that you've worked on from Netscape up until now for Mozilla?
Well, I started out working on documentation on ZoolPlanet.com. I did that starting at around 1999. I mainly did that because I wanted to learn how to use it and all that. So I wrote all this documentation, and people liked it and all that, and I kept going with that. Like, I still had another job that wasn't...
So you were volunteering?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I still had another job that wasn't... I wasn't doing as much browser customization at that time, because we moved on to website stuff and so on, like, for my job. But I still kept going with the documentation stuff. And then a couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I started getting a little bit into the actual coding and stuff. I mean, very minimal at first, and then I started picking up. I started working on a larger project. I started working on some application of my own. I haven't worked on that for a while, but I did a bit of it. And then I got a job at MozDev, which does Mozilla Consulting. That was at the end of probably 2003, October, and I worked there for just over 2 years. And we did a variety of projects, or paid for projects, for various companies and the U.S. government and so on. And then I got a job here at Mozilla.
And when was that?
That was in February.
February?
Yeah.
So what are you working on now?
I do Azul stuff, which is the UI language. That's mainly my responsibility. I've done a few other things for Firefox 2 or whatever that needed to be done, but that's mainly what I've been working on.
So when you volunteered, how often did you volunteer, and say maybe how many hours a week or a month did you generally volunteer?
It tended to depend on how excited I got about doing something. I mean, there were periods where I wouldn't do much for several weeks. And then there were periods where I got excited about something, and then I would work on it all weekend. It depended on feedback as well. If somebody provided feedback, say, oh, I wish we had some documentation about this, I thought, oh, that's a good idea, and I'd rush to write it or something. But I would say probably I mean, except for weekends. I mean, during the week I didn't do that much, maybe an hour or two here. It really depended on how interested I was at the time on whatever it is I was doing.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, what would you say is the biggest reason why you volunteered?
Well, initially it was because I was interested, like I'm interested in UI. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to learn how to use this UI technology, like UI markup language and so on. And I wanted to learn it. So I thought, well, a good way of learning it is to write some documentation on it, which wasn't really available at the time. So I thought, well, we can sort of do two things here. I can write documentation for other people as well as try to learn it myself. I mean, it started out very small, and then it, like now it's like 5 times larger or 10 times larger or something. And that way I could learn the language and keep my interest in UI alive.
And what did you find it, how did you sort of enter into the community as a volunteer? Was it sort of an easy thing to do, or were there certain barriers you sort of had to cross?
Yeah, it was hard because I'm fairly shy. And so, I mean, there's a barrier of trying to get, you have to kind of get involved on IRC and chat and all that kind of stuff.
Had you ever, at that point, used IRC?
No, I hadn't used that before, so it provided a big barrier. And, of course, you've got these people. I mean, at that time, Mozilla was still a lot of Netscape people.
Right, so what year was this? Probably 98, 99?
Yeah, 99 or so.
99, okay.
I mean, I'd been reading stuff, like, as a read-only sort of user. Like, I didn't actually contribute before that.
And how long were you doing the read-only before you...
Well, since they started, really. I mean, often. Not as much as later, but I just kept my interests going in the background, because it was sort of relevant to my job as well, mm-hmm. in a sense, to keep up with what Netscape was doing, because that's what my job was. There was a lot of barrier with all the Netscape people. They did seem a little bit more... Like, they knew what they were doing and all that, and I didn't, of course, so there's a bit of a barrier there, and it is sort of overwhelming, all these people that you don't know, especially if you're like me, a quiet sort of person.
So did you sort of start off slowly?
Yeah, very slowly. Yeah, yeah.
What were the first sort of contributions that you made?
Yeah, the documentation was first. Yeah, that was the first thing, and I just posted a message on the news group saying I've written this documentation. It was at that time it was about 12 pages or so. I mean, it's now about 70. And people said, this is great stuff. And that sort of encouraged me to keep going.
And who was it who first started communicating with you? People from QA, or who did you like generally first start talking with?
Probably other...
Developers?
No, I would say more other... See, that's why it was hard to get in, because mm-hmm. the real developers didn't generally communicate.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that to be the case, whereas people who... were learning the technology outside, other volunteers would communicate.
With one another?
Yeah.
So was there kind of an intermediate, was there anybody who was sort of employed by Netscape or Mozilla who was like acted as an intermediary between the developers and the volunteers?
Not for me, no.
No.
I mean, there may have been for other people.
And
it really depends on how much, mm-hmm. you, like some people really sort of are more aggressive about talking. Like, I wasn't very aggressive with all that. But some people are more, mm-hmm. like, they try to get more and more involved, I mean, to the point of getting annoying, for example, or whatever, right?
And what was
Which is what I didn't want to annoy people, that's the thing.
What was your full-time job at the time?
Working at an ISP.
Okay.
Yeah. I worked there until early 2002,
okay.
and then I sort of just had off and on jobs for a while. And then I worked at MozDev, and then Mozilla.
Okay, and right now, I guess, or maybe even over time, since you've been contributing on Mozilla projects, do you generally work alone, or do you work within small groups, or and how do you communicate with the people
here at Mozilla?
Work with? Yeah.
Generally, on my own. I mean, I haven't had a lot of projects yet where I've had to work with other people. I mean, in some developers, depending on what their role is, they just sort of go off and say, okay, do these kinds of things. It was a bit weird at first because I wasn't used to that. And I mean, I told them about it. I was asking, should I be getting things to do and all that? And they say, no, just work on whatever you think needs to be done. So it was an odd feeling. I mean, it was sort of odd because I sort of expected somebody to sort of be watching what I was doing, at least. And that's sort of an odd feeling that maybe someone isn't. So you're not sure whether you're doing the right thing or whether they just don't know what you're doing. I have done a couple of things that have involved other people. Session storage stuff was a recent thing that I worked on. And some stuff with the notification bar, the yellow strip that says a pop-up has been blocked. Those are things that we did for Firefox 2, which I worked on with other people. And we just communicated in the usual sort of IRC or email or Bugzilla or whatever.
And so you're describing sort of the lack of structure. I imagine that was different from what you had previously been working on.
Yeah. Well, I think it depends on the person. I mean, some people are more involved in... Like right now, I think a lot of people are more focused on Firefox 2, whereas a lot of my work is more later stuff. Mm-hmm. For version 3, so it doesn't have quite as high noticeability in terms of, like if I was working on some key, like when I was working on the session storage stuff, that was definitely more noticed and people were paying attention. I mean, Mike Shaver, who was in the room with me, we were talking about it, I mean, and all that stuff.
And... Do you feel as though strict ownership of specific areas of code is enforced?
In some areas, yes, definitely. In other areas, it's like there isn't. There's so much code, of course, that there's only so many people to do that. So some of it is sort of reduced in terms of like so there's huge blocks of code where. One or two people or whatever sort of are the person you would go to ask about that, but they may not actually know the specifics of a certain piece of code, like the code that selects the code that handles selecting text and all that is a big piece that nobody really knows a lot about. But there are people that sort of would own the larger directory or whatever that's in. That we would probably ask about it, but they wouldn't necessarily know anything about it. But I do think it is important to have that ownership, strong ownership in those cases so that there is somebody, so that you know the code is being maintained. I mean, sometimes some of the volunteers have wondered, is this particular feature even being maintained? And there are features like that that we don't know whether they haven't been worked on for years or whatever, and we don't know whether they're being maintained and if there's crashes in them and all that. And we don't necessarily even know if people are using them heavily or not.
So in those instances where maybe there's no clear owner, if you will, then who might one go to if they wanted to make a change? Is there somebody that they would feel they need to ask or communicate, or would you just sort of go in and start working?
Well, it depends on the person. I mean, usually people come over and they would ask. The trick is you have to, people have to always be encouraging so that they do help out. But not everybody has that personality where they're always encouraging. So if you're lucky, you get encouraged and you start helping out. And some people do that, and that's how people get involved. But other people sometimes get discouraged by the fact that nobody knows what to do, and they don't necessarily help out. But some people just decide they want to do something and they fix it. And in the cases where there isn't any strong ownership, somebody eventually just gets suggested.
So that person, maybe somebody who steps forward and starts making changes, would that person ever sort of like become?
Eventually, if they keep working on it. I mean, there's various people that have gotten into that. I mean, I sort of did that with certain aspects of Zool as well. And there's a couple other people that have picked up a piece, and then they're probably the person who you would go to now.
Hmm. Have you ever sort of clashed with another developer over a particular point of code? And if so, like how did you sort of resolve?
Not yet, no.
No.
I haven't been as involved in big code changes yet. But some people have had that problem, I'm sure.
And have you ever noticed any sort of tensions or major differences just sort of fundamentally between people who work on the front end and people who work on the back end?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely that kind of thing. There were a lot of those kind of problems once we moved from the Mozilla suite over to Firefox. I mean, there were a lot of clashes there. I mean, from front-end people and back-end people as well, because the back-end people is sort of the Gecko part, is different people that have different goals for what they're trying to do and when they're trying to do it, when they want to have a release and so on. And then the Firefox people have their own timelines and so on. So sometimes that happens, but I think the people who have been on the project longer know that those kinds of things those kinds of things are naturally happening. I mean, people that are new or outsiders don't always know that kind of thing, and they wonder why people are making changes that don't make sense to them or whatever. And there's all kinds of issues and politics around those kinds of things.
And so, how are issues like that generally resolved or talked about?
Well, it depends on the issue.
So yeah, if you want to give an example, if you have an example, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, the big issues are not always resolved. Usually news groups usually do that, actually, rather than just because it's a bit more, I guess, rather than IRC where the discussion goes away. Mm-hmm. Like news groups, it allows discussion to continue. Things don't generally always get resolved, especially the huge issues like that kind of thing, but littler things usually do. Now that once you have strong owners of pieces, they sort of become the sort of final say, so it makes it a lot easier. Now that we actually have Mozilla Corporation and a lot more people and a lot more strong owners, I mean, even owners outside the Mozilla Corporation, it's made it easier for people to, especially in the Firefox UI, and we have Mike Beltzner who does the UI part, or other people who sort of say these are the things they're sort of we're going to be doing, and so it sometimes causes conflicts in people that are new that don't always know that somebody has to take control and decide how things are going to be, even though you might not agree with it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you started off as a volunteer. To what extent do you think Mozilla relies on the work of volunteers, and has that reliance changed over time?
I think it's definitely much more so now. Like when Netscape was pretty much owned it, they pretty much did most of the decision making and all that. And I think that made it very hard and very contentious with people trying to get involved. I mean, because it was, there were a big company around it, or AOL even. So nowadays, Mozilla is a lot more open with that kind of thing. I mean, they invite volunteers to their developer days and so on. They definitely don't want to take over in any way. And there are quite a few people outside, especially in the QA. I mean, that's pretty much all done by volunteers, except for a small handful of people. There are certain things that the volunteers can't really do, like maintain all the servers and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of, they don't actually want to hire everybody from the community. But they have hired quite a few people that they thought were good, but they haven't done that for everybody.
Do you think that is volunteering sort of the best way, the best approach that you wanted to get hired? Would you start?
Yeah, if you wanted to get hired, that's the best way because it shows that you know what you're doing and you can get it, you know how to get involved and communicate with everybody. I mean, some people aren't, they're just, I mean, depending, I mean, obviously developers, that's the best way. I mean, if you're doing marketing or something, like, there's not really any way, well, to some degree, but, I mean, some people in, like, more management positions would just get hired, which is, could be contentious to some of the volunteers or whatever. Because, I mean, there's new guys coming in at the higher levels of the corporation, mm-hmm. and that can sometimes, volunteers, who is this new guy who's telling us what features need to be implemented, that sort of thing. So they have to sort of balance that with making sure the volunteers do actually have more enough say. Because it feels a lot better when you sort of say, I made this or I decided that that's a good thing.
So have there been a number of people sort of hired just for managerial positions recently, or are...
Yeah, they've hired a bunch of people like that.
I mean, and so how does that, how do you strike that balance between making sure that people have been around for a while, people have been volunteering for a while, do feel like they have enough input and enough say?
I think because the managers, in a sense, do try to stay a bit more away from the specific decisions. Like, I think the developers are more interested in, like, where does this button go or whatever, or what kind of design for the implementation part as opposed to general when do we launch type things, which is, I think, what the managers would do. Mm-hmm. Although, yeah, they have to make sure that they don't try to overwhelm with a lot of this is what the UI should look like, right? Or this is how, right? This is the feature we're going to implement, and you implemented it this way. We want to have the volunteers decide for themselves how it should be done, or more collaboratively, at least. Well, that's what I think, anyway.
Mm-hmm. I understand that during the early development of Firefox, CBS access was restricted to a very small team of people.
That's right, yeah.
And
To Firefox, yes. UI, and the rest of it was still the same.
The back end,
yeah,
was developed in the same manner,
yeah,
that other...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, if anybody that had gotten CBS access before that still had it there, but not for the UI.
The UI.
Yeah. And there's other people. The JavaScript portion is only accessible to certain people.
Even now, you're saying.
Yeah, and that's always been the case. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple other modules that are like that.
And do you think that's...
But those are modules that are very strongly owned, mm-hmm. so it makes sense in that case.
Do you think that's a good model for production? A good way to work?
I think the problem with that was more that the people outside of that group thought that they were being excluded in some way. Not that they necessarily were, but just the way it was done was seemed like they were being excluded. So it sort of built up this atmosphere of exclusionism, even though it wasn't necessarily the case. So because you couldn't access it, and it seemed like you couldn't access it, you couldn't influence their decisions and all that kind of stuff.
And how, or does that differ at all from any other Mozilla projects? The sort of restricted access?
I think there's restricted on all the... Mm-hmm. I mean, well, there's the other various tools like Bugzilla and so on. I assume that they have... I mean, I haven't really contributed at all in there, but I mean, I assume they must have their own set of restrictions and regulations and all that. And the same set of problems, I'm sure.
Why do you think Mozilla, and in particular Mozilla Firefox, has been able to attract such a large number of users?
I would probably say, I mean, obviously there's marketing behind it. I think it's just that there was sort of like this new vision for the simpler UI. And it's not so much the simpler UI, but just that I think just having like a vision for it rather than like the older style, like Mozilla, or that was more sort of what Netscape was, that really was just sort of chugging along and wasn't really taking the extra steps to go anywhere. And I think people saw, oh, this Firefox is actually going somewhere, and it's new, and it's more focused on what users want to do, and that's sort of what they've been pushing, and I think that's really what does actually sell a lot of things, making sure that they're focused on what the user actually wants as opposed to what the company wants them to do or whatever.
How would you list Mozilla's priorities?
I would certainly say that Firefox was the main priority. Do you mean that sort of granularity or?
Yeah, sure. I mean, or however you maybe see whether or not the priorities have changed over time. I mean, you've been with the project in one way or another, it seems, for a long time.
Yeah,
I think if you see a shift in focus or priorities at all.
Yeah, I mean, in the earlier days, the focus was more on everything as a whole, I think. Just browser, not just the browser, but the mail as well. And Netscape had that focus as well for corporate users or whatever that were interested, as well as back-end stuff and being able to embed it in other products, so we'd be able to embed the browser into other products or and so on. Whereas now, I think the focus is more on, I think they've sort of more cleanly divided, well, not necessarily cleanly, but they've divided up the pieces a bit more into Firefox and Thunderbird and then Zoom Runner, which is the embedding sort of part, I suppose, or the equivalent. Mm-hmm. So I think they've, I think it makes it easier for them to prioritize the specific pieces. As opposed to before, where everything was just sort of one big blob and there was no real priority on any piece.
And the marketing of the projects.
Yeah.
Do you feel like marketing is something that the developers can sort of do along with the community, like the Spread Firefox community or community of volunteers?
Yeah.
Or do you think it's important to have some professional marketers aboard?
Well, so far it's worked with just having, well, no, I mean, we do have a few.
Mm-hmm.
But it has worked very well with the volunteers, I think especially in Europe. I'm not sure if we actually have any real professional people. There are not very many. I mean, we only have a limited number of people, and
mm-hmm.
we've managed to push very well in this. But in other areas of the world, in Asian markets or whatever, we haven't done as well. Yeah, but I think the idea is, I think the volunteers have done a good job, but I mean, they do have a couple of people just to, I mean, I think there's probably a need for at least a few to get into areas where volunteers can't necessarily get, like either into businesses or into paying for certain things, like when we did that New York Times ad. I think that probably needed, I mean, volunteers, I don't think, would necessarily have done that on their own. I think it needed somebody to drive that. I'm not sure who exactly did that. Probably Acer or someone.
Why do you think it is that Firefox is mainly the focus of marketing efforts, and to a lesser extent, maybe Thunderbird, but maybe Firefox seems to be the main focus of marketing efforts.
I guess because I think it's easier to push a browser, probably. I mean, it's a simpler product, I think. I mean, I think the mail requires more server infrastructure and so on. It's harder to get. I mean, a lot of people use webmail anyway, so it's probably harder to push that kind of product. I mean, mail doesn't have the same issues. Like a browser has all this, had for the last few years, has all this pop-up issues and that kind of thing. People having problems with that kind of stuff. And then, well, I guess mail also has the junk mail and all that kind of thing, but I don't think that... Also, the mail isn't quite as... there isn't necessarily one other mail client to go after, because people use webmail and they use Outlook and they use Eudora or whatever, or Gmail or whatever, and whereas the browser is more... there's only one main competitor, so it's IE. Mm-hmm. And it's probably easier to target, maybe.
Mm-hmm. What about, why do you think Firefox is marketed more than other Mozilla browsers?
As I said, I think it's because it's more, it has more of a vision, I think, than than the suite does or whatever.
Have you contributed to any non-Mozilla open source software projects?
No, I don't think so, no.
This is sort of a broad question, but how might you define a successful open source project? What sort of elements or practices do you think might be necessary for developing a successful project?
Well, I wouldn't say it was necessarily the number of people that were using the product, because you could be a success with just a small number. I mean, I think it's really dependent on the project. Perhaps, I guess, a successful project is just one that enough people use that you can continue developing and continue improving. I mean, if not enough people are using it, then you might get discouraged and yeah, like so that enough people can, and you get more people involved, and it starts growing. I suppose. I mean, as long as the project keeps going, then I think that's just a success. Well, for me anyway. I mean, different projects may have very different goals. I mean, Mozilla says that their goal is to have the open internet and all that kind of thing, rather than one browser. Although, I mean, I don't know what they would do if, say, Firefox became 50% usage. I mean, would they say, okay, that's enough, now we've done what we need to do, or would they keep going to get up to a higher level? I mean, that's always a sort of interesting question.
Is that a question that is discussed? I mean,
I think it's probably being discussed, yeah. I mean,
there's no clear answer at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what would happen then. I mean, because it's not really their goal to get to achieve world domination or anything. I mean, that might be Microsoft's goal, but it's not necessarily ours. So
what would you list? Well, I guess, I mean, obviously, you probably have a number of goals, but would you list are the most, maybe one, two, or three most important goals of Mozilla?
Well, their main goal is to... I can't remember the exact wording, but it's something like to promote open freedom on the internet, or not freedom as like speech or anything, but just being able to have more than access and more than one, like not be cross platform, like being able to use different systems and not just be controlled by one vendor or something. Yeah, I suppose that sort of generally is their goal. But other goals like making money and achieving world domination and all those are not goals.
Do you consider open source software projects as a public service?
In a sense. I mean, I think it probably... in the sense that it encourages, like if 10 companies get together and build one product, it sort of seems more valuable than if the 10 companies each built their own version of this similar product. Like it seems like that's a lot more, it would seem more cost effective to me to just build one or two or some smaller number rather than having everybody, although you do sort of need different versions, I guess, in order for some reason to improve the product. That's especially how companies would look at it anyway.
Mm-hmm. What if anything do you think the popularity of Firefox will do for sort of open source as a whole?
I think it's done quite a bit. I mean, once you have some successful projects, I mean, people sort of, I mean, whether Mozilla considers a large number of users to be a success or not, I mean, the media, like, or whatever, or individual other users would probably consider that to be a success. So I think it probably is fairly encouraging for other projects. Whether that necessarily, like, a big thing would be whether to get large computer manufacturers like Dell or whatever to actually use the software as by default.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of these other products. Firefox could be doing that. It's fairly easy for them to use Firefox on a computer as opposed to, say, Linux or something.
Mm-hmm.
And some products like Apache or whatever are not meant for individuals, and that has been a successful product. So, I mean, Apache already is a fairly highly used product even before Firefox. So I don't think Firefox is necessarily the first one to have done that, although it might be the first more user product that's done that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people will probably see that as a success, in a sense.
And do you think that open source techniques can be applied to other means of production, like we sort of already mentioned marketing being done by volunteers and sort of opening that up?
Yeah.
Do you kind of see that as part of the same movement? And do you think that there are other kinds of things that can be opened up in similar manners?
It's possible. I think it might be hard to do that given sort of just the way that companies have historically worked. I mean, with trade secrets and all that kind of stuff. And it's probably harder to do that, especially in North America. I think it's probably a bit easier in Europe, I would say. I guess there's a lot of products that are made sort of with pieces by lots of companies working together. I mean, they're not necessarily open.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it really depends on how the company feels. I mean, some companies are a little more open in that, and I think having more open source and stuff might encourage. I mean, even Microsoft is now more sort of open than they were 5 years ago. I mean, and I think open source has probably been a big factor in that, and then the internet and all that stuff. Having people encouraging them to provide more of their various things and be more open and add like weblogs and all that from their developers and so on. I mean, it used to be the case where companies wouldn't even be allowed to talk to people about anything they were doing, right? I mean, whereas now you often see that. I mean, sometimes it's limited, but sometimes they can get really open in that way, and I think people appreciate that kind of thing.
Do you think that this is sort of a trend that will continue, or I guess more broadly, what do you think the future is for open source?
I think that will continue. I mean, I don't see why it would disappear. And it's not like it can really diminish in any way. I mean, it's not really gone too far yet, so I think there's still lots more it can go, places for it to go.
Okay. Great.
That's it?
That's all I have for you. Thank you.
Was that good?